This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Over Under Sports Bar. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? And what up, Webster, Texas? As we are back at our home away from home, Over Under Sports Bar, and you should be too. Come on out and see us as it's the final day of the farewell tour for AJ Hoffman before it's the actual day of the farewell tour.
And you'll no longer be able to see him on Twitch. Yesterday was the last day that you could see him on Twitch, and now you can't see his beautiful face on Twitch anymore.
Beautiful face, huh?
I mean, he calls it a beautiful face. I mean, you got to be kind of nice to him. It's his second to last show.
Do you really?
I mean, considering I've been calling him fat all week. I mean, yeah, I'm going to be nice to him today. I'm going to be nice to him tomorrow. I haven't been rude to him.
And basically, look, Aaron, you and Fred are the USA gymnastics team. Did you hear that one?
Today? I mean, were the USA gymnastics team?
No, he called.
And he's Simone Biles leaving you high and dry. He's leaving the team. He's crapping on you guys, and therefore he's cowardly leaving and leaving you guys out to dry and screwing his team over.
No, he's not.
I don't feel that way either. I like what Dell said. He said AJ wouldn't give the hometown discount. He went for more money. I like the way Dell put it.
I mean, it's pretty much cut and dried, right? I mean, if you're making more money somewhere else, I'm not mad at you.
I am. Why can't you give the hometown discount, AJ?
Huh? You paying his bills?
No, I would have gone too. Congratulations to AJ, and we're gonna have an unbelievable show tomorrow at Carbox, so I'm looking forward to that as well. So
no doubt. So we're here today at Over Under Sports Bar in Webster. We're gonna be here till 4:00. Blitz gonna be here till 7:00. Then tomorrow, as Nick mentioned, Carbox, as the festivities will absolutely be over the top in AJ's last day, and everybody will come out and say their goodbyes and have a good time. So that's a great thing. And another great thing is the fact that the Astros won again yesterday while we were on the air. Finished the deal, though it did take a while. Good Lord, 11-4 was the final after they were up for the majority of the game from 3-0 to 8-3 to 11-4. But they got the win. They get a much-needed day off, and then they go to, shockingly, San Francisco with the Giants and the best record in baseball. As they continue this West Coast swing, but with the trade deadline tomorrow at 3 Central, there are still moves to be made, teams wheeling and dealing, and the question becomes, are they done? Are the Astros done, and have they done enough, or are they still looking for one last deal or so?
Look, and it's kind of what I expected. I said, look, don't expect an incredibly sexy name like a Max Scherzer. And I think Max Scherzer has already been on you know, it's been documented that he says he doesn't want to be a Houston Astro. I kind of had that feeling to begin with. And I don't know why he doesn't want to be a Houston Astro, if it has anything to do with the scandal or the fact that he doesn't want to live in Houston. But a guy that has a no-trade clause in his contract has that power, and he can kind of choose where he wants to play. So I kind of expected this from Click, not necessarily because – he didn't get the job done. I just didn't expect him to get the sexy name considering the availability in the free agent market. Or not the free agent market, the trade deadline market. You know what I mean? So.
And as we talked about, and by the way, Jesse Rogers of ESPN is the one that reported that Max Scherzer would approve a trade to any of the West Coast teams pursuing a deal for him, but has ruled out Houston and Philadelphia as destinations. He can veto a trade using his 10-5 rights, 10 years of service, 5 with the same team. Astros out. Like I said yesterday, you don't want to be here, I don't want you here. So just move on from that. The fact that Click has been able to do what he's been able to do, as much as I keep saying we never heard from him. When we did, I can't complain with anything that he's done. The fact that he added closers from two other teams, the fact that he added two pitchers that each have an ERA well below half of what most of the pitchers in the Astros bullpen have, and now you can get back to like that 17-19 Astros team where you have someone for the 7th, you have someone for the 8th, you have someone for the 9th, and it doesn't matter in what order or who does what, you have three closers in your bullpen on a nightly basis. Dusty Baker immediately gets excited now as opposed to what he's been dealing with every time he looks out there in the outfield to see who's warming up.
Look, and he's already been on record, said, look, it's not over. We still have until 3:01 on Friday to get the freaking job done. One quote that I saw on the Chronicle was, we've got 44 more hours to go, and we're going to use all of those hours to continue to try to improve the roster. All right, obviously the big question is whether or not they're willing to go past the $210 million competitive balance tax for a second year in a row. So, I mean, I don't know if they are willing to. It sounds like they are, but I don't know if they necessarily have to, considering the big names that they could have gotten. That's what would have put them well over the tax. I don't know if they – right now, all the deals that they got so far are pretty budget-friendly.
Yeah, they are, and that's the other thing that I was going to say. We knew that the other thing going into this whole trade deadline push – was the fact that the Astros were not in a position of strength like many other teams because their farm system was depleted. We had heard the rumblings from Buster Olney of what it would take to get a Craig Kimbrel, and that was three top prospects and Brian Abreu. It then got ratcheted up even higher, even in the Scherzer discussions, where they started talking about like the top prospects of the Astros, including Leon, where I was like, and for that reason, I'm out. But when they got two closers from other squads, the need for Kimbrel was completely erased. That's off the table now. With Scherzer pulling his name off the table for the Astros, if you can get a Berrios, if you can get a young top-notch starter, and it doesn't cost you much, so be it. But take, for example, the Blue Jays. They need a closer. They've been really hurting in terms of their pitching. They went out and they got Brad Hand, who is a rental, but they had to give up the top power-hitting prospect in their minor league farm system, a catcher that a lot of people are high on. I don't think at this point the Astros, in terms of quote-unquote needs left, have anything that is so desperate, so much needed, that they need to go into that farm system and give up a bunch for anybody. We said the luxury would be, do you want an extra center fielder, Byron Buxton, instead of Miles Straw? It's a luxury if you can pull it off and it doesn't cost you too much. If you don't, you're still fine. And if you need a starting pitcher, you can look, but you have enough that I don't think you absolutely have to knock yourself out.
Yeah. And in regards to what you said about Craig Kimbrel, I have a feeling that the Cubs didn't really necessarily care to make a deal with the Astros. I think that's part of the reason why they were asking for an enormous amount. I think they really didn't want anything from the Astros that really excited them.
I heard they had their sights on every one of the top prospects on the Astros. And with a guy that I think only has one more year left at a very expensive contract, but not the pitcher he used to be, he's not worth all
but
that.
But weren't they asking for like a haul, like a massive haul?
Yeah, a haul. Four, like not like in terms of Kimbrel initially, it was supposed to be their number three, their number 20-something and 30-something prospect.
Right.
They ratcheted it up when they found out how many teams are interested in Kimbrel and came back to Houston and said, no, we want Leon. We want your top three to four prospects in the farm system and possibly a player too. At which point, if I'm James Click, I go, thanks, but no thanks, hang up the phone, and I'm done.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I wouldn't. But there's several reasons as to why a general manager would ask for a haul. Number one, maybe, just maybe, you give up that haul. Maybe you're either dumb enough or you really want the player bad enough to get it. Number two is maybe you really don't want to deal with them, or maybe you're just trying to use it as negotiating leverage against another team. There's several reasons why as to why you're asking for a haul. The Cubs-Astros situation, it strikes me as odd, just because – and look, Craig Kimbrel does deserve a lot. Like, if you're going to get a guy like Craig Kimbrel, you should give up a lot.
Anymore?
But not what they were asking.
No, I don't think you give up that much for Kimbrel anymore, because he's not the Craig Kimbrel of old when he was the most dominant, or one of the most dominant closers in baseball. He's good. He's not great. He's not something that I'm going to mortgage my future for, especially when my farm system has been compromised. The other thing to your point is, I think the Cubs look at the other farm systems of the other teams that are interested, and they look at themselves and go, you know what, there's a lot more top prospects to be had in the Red Sox farm system or in some of the other teams that are basically calling us for the same guy. We're probably going to end up getting more from one of those teams that are more desperate than a Houston team that doesn't have to have him anymore with the guys that they just got.
Yeah, so he was making a total base salary of $16 million this year, and then he becomes an unrestricted free agent the following season. So, yeah, at 33 years of age, it is kind of a gamble to give up too much for a guy like Craig Kimbrel, but I know it's just weird to me. And look, I would have been super happy. Like, if you consider what they've added so far, Yimi Garcia and Graveman, and then you put Kimbrel in the mix, I mean –
then it's really
click,
I mean,
click did his job. Like,
I think he already has.
He did his job. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing you can really say about James Click. Now it's on them and Dusty to actually perform and do well for the remainder of the season and going into the postseason.
As we said yesterday, Nick, the other thing that you don't have to make a single move or lift a finger for that's going to help you as well is if Baez is now truly on his way to coming back to the Astros finally after they acquired him in the offseason, and he's had like five straight appearances for the Skeeters. His last was scoreless and 15 pitches. If he comes to your ball club now, even after the trade deadline, you look at it as just an added bonus of, hey, it's like making another deal. We got an experienced playoff-tested pitcher that we can add to the mix as well that's better than what we've been going to, and so it's like making the deal without having to get anything up. You have a Baez, as well as the other guys you mentioned, and as well as Presley still at the back end, you still have a Javier, you have a Stanek, and the rest of those guys can go kick rocks.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And now you have all the depth that you need. You've got the bats. Alex Bregman is still yet to make the return from Sugarland. So, dude, it's going to be a really good team. Now I'm super excited because the bullpen issue was obvious from the get-go. It was
a deal breaker in terms of how far they could go.
Well, I mean, we were talking like it like they wouldn't make the World Series in some instances, because when you have a bullpen like that, and then you have like a month or two, or maybe even 2, 3, 4 weeks, where even 6 weeks, where you have a couple of your bats not doing well, and they're not doing well the same time as your bullpen is not carrying you, dude. That's hurtful. That causes losing streaks. That causes all kind. Ultimately, if you have enough talent, you'll get past it, and I think that's what the Astros have done.
And it's,
but for the most part, it's a struggle.
It's also essentially why they didn't need a bat, because you're getting two bats back, and again, you don't have to. It doesn't cost you anything. You're getting Bregman, who's been out basically forever, to come back and be your starting third baseman. You could afford to give up Toro, because the backup to Bregman already came back and did exactly what he's been doing when he's been healthy since he's joined the Astros and led him as Diaz, which is he's a stick at the plate. He's a glove no matter where you put him. He's a smart, heady baseball player with a good arm that you can use like your Marwin Gonzalez's of the past. Therefore, Toro was expendable, and you don't need to add an extra bat because your lineup, which is already one of the top five lineups in baseball, just added two more bats to it. So you're in even a better position.
There you go.
It's good, right?
Astros, can your boy Rafael Stone do anything for the Rockets?
Mm.
By the way, you're not the only Rockets hater on this radio station. Charlie Pulillo is one,
too. Why am I a Rockets hater? I'm a Rockets realist.
He was criticizing, I believe it was Suggs, that were saying that the Houston Rockets have all this star power. Yeah, they do. Don't say they don't have that star power. All right?
Charlie going to spar again?
1 or 2 years away from a championship, the Houston Rockets.
Oh, you want to bet on that?
No, I'm not betting. I'm not putting a penny on that.
Lots more to get to as we just get the program underway from the Over Under Sports Bar in Webster. You should be here. Stop by, grab some lunch, hang out with us, stay for the Blitz. We've got things to talk about. Day two of Texans camp as that continues. NFL camps are all underway as Dak Prescott avoids a bigger issue, but still may miss significant amount of the first couple of weeks of training camp, and lots of other things. You guys want to join us? 713-780-3776. HRP listener line to call or text. If you text, put your name on it. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. On Twitter, at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, together with the Press Box ESPN.
You should see me in the crowd. I'm gonna run this nothing out. Watch me make them bow.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. You are listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Over Under Sports Bar. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, back on the box from Webster, Texas, in the Over Under Sports Bar, where you should be here if you got nothing better to do. And even if you do, skip out on that to get to this. It's us and the Blitz all the way till 7. Has some fun. Promo team just arrived to set up and give away a bunch of goodies and get you registered for the grand prize of the summer circuit, which would be that Traeger grill given away at the end of the summer. So there's that. Claire is here.
Claire and Alex. So
Alex is here.
Shout out to Claire and Alex. I got a tweet I want to read for you.
Please.
In regards to your Houston Rockets.
Okay.
From Woj, yes. It reads as follows. With Cade Cunningham a solid number one to Detroit now, Houston and Cleveland continue to trend toward Jalen Green and Evan Mobley with the second and third picks, respectively. Sources tell ESPN.
ESPN also reporting that Detroit went to New York, had a separate meeting with Cunningham, finally decided for once and for all they're in the driver's seat. They can take whoever they want, and they're just focused in on making that happen. So that allows everybody else. Actually, the Rockets get more bargaining power now, too, because if they did truly want to, like Stone had indicated, think about trading the pick. Now, if you know Cunningham's off the board and you're a team that has your eyes set on one of the other players and you're not currently at two or three, you pick up the phone and then the Rockets start going, well, what's it worth to you? Where do you have your picks? What more can I get? And then you have to weigh, is not taking a Green or a Mobley and getting a few extra picks worth more than taking the player that you have your eyes set on? Or less. And if it's less, you move on. And if
those
it's more,
you
talk.
For this year, next year, what round? What
I mean, you could do it however you wanted to. I mean, you would hope that and assume that it's someone that still has a pick within, like, the top 10, but maybe they enhance it by having two picks in this year's first round or giving you this one and something for next year, because we know after this year, the cupboard is pretty much bare in terms of what Daryl Morey left for the Rockets when he skipped town in terms of how many resources, assets, and draft picks he gave away. So
okay, well. So I think it's safe to say that Detroit is probably going to pull the trigger and get Cade. That's
yeah.
Okay. So what are the do's and the don'ts for Rafael Stone in your mind? Meaning what moves would you be okay with and what moves would you not be okay with in the draft tonight?
Well, I think from a Rockets perspective, you don't just have one need. It's like we were talking about the Astros before the trade deadline. We knew that bullpen was the number one focus because it's basically the only hole that they really had. If you're looking for the Rockets, there's more holes than there's guaranteed solid fixes at positions, in the rotation. You've got a bunch of young players, and you got a bunch of stale veterans that could be crotchety at some point, as you and I spoke about this week. I think if you're the Rockets, the ideal way to play this is you know who you're going to go with, and you stick to it and take whoever you want it to. Then you start getting a little creative. If Indiana truly wants Eric Gordon, take him. Get him off your books. Take the number 13 pick, and if they've got a few young players that you could possibly work with, you consider that on a short-term deal because no matter what they give you, it's better than an unhappy Eric Gordon in your locker room for a year or more. Same thing with John Wall. We said he's virtually untradeable, but if there's some way to work something out, and if Daryl Morey's desperate and even wants to talk to you about Ben Simmons, you consider any and every option because the one thing you don't want is what John Wall's going to be, a problem. He's going to get his money, but every day he's going to bitch, and every day he's going to think about nothing but himself, and every day he's going to like tweets where they have him playing somewhere else, and that is going to be a detriment and a bad influence on a young roster that you're putting together for the Rockets going forward.
Yeah, well, I can't wait, to be honest with you, because I want to know what everybody says in reaction, especially a team, you know, a fan base that's been used to winning. I know they've never won a championship, or at least not in the past 25, 26 years, but a fan base for the past decade that have been absolutely used to winning in the regular season, making it to the playoffs each and every year, having star players, in most cases two, not just one. It's going to be interesting to see how this fan base reacts, man, because it's a high-pressure situation. Each and every year you suck, and that's exactly what the Rockets are right now. They're just a team that absolutely sucks. I mean, you have a few good players. They need to develop. We like Christian Wood. Maybe he develops into a star, but we don't know that yet. So you got to get some young people that you can potentially develop.
I mean, the thing is, and you know, John Tsar is on Twitch saying, Joel still with the wall for Simmons talk. I'm with the wall for anybody talk.
Because
what
I disagreed with you, that's why.
Yeah, I just, you know what, just because we disagree, it's a discussion, but here's the thing. I'd give him away for a bowl of soup if someone would take him, but with that price tag, nobody's signing up to take him, just like nobody's signing up to trade for Deshaun Watson until you've got some clarity. If you're telling me that John Wall's willing to give back $10 million or more of his remaining years and that the Rockets can get out from under that, I'm interested in a buyout. If you're telling me that, you know, he wants a trade, but there's some team dumb enough to consider it, and anything that you get back in return might be good or better than what you have with John Wall, and it doesn't have a negative influence on your young roster, I'm considering it. Because John Wall is not going to be positive and good for this franchise next year or beyond.
No, I think he has to move, too, because of the whole age and the veteran factor and the fact that there's no way John Wall at that age, coming from Washington where he was the man, deemed himself the man on this team, is going to let other younger players be vocal and direct the offense and stuff like that. There's just no way. The only way you do that is you let them know up front that you're not going to be the starter, or you're going to have a certain amount of minutes, or this is your particular role. Now, with Philadelphia, I think he might enjoy that role a little bit. Like, if they somehow make that deal happen, yeah, I can see John Wall being way happier in Philadelphia as opposed to Houston. But at the same time, do you really want to take the chance on a guy like John Wall if you're Philadelphia? I know you say yes.
I think
I'd be hesitant.
I've spoken to a few of my friends around the league, too, that thought that from an offensive perspective, Philly would be a better team. from a Daryl Morey perspective, he's kind of desperate short-term because he knows he's locked into so many big contracts, as you highlighted yesterday when we were talking about this, that he doesn't have many options to get better, and he knows he's chasing Milwaukee and Brooklyn. So I think that those are the kind of secret or the hidden variables or the kind of factors that could maybe leave the door cracked open for someone to be willing to. But to, just to give you guys an idea of why I want Wall out so badly, he's out there on social media liking any talk of any trade or any movement to get him anywhere from the Clippers to the Sixers to any place but Houston, Texas. And it's just like Max Scherzer or anything else. If you don't want to be here, then I don't want you, and I want you to go away. It's just really hard to make a guy go away that you still have to pay $40 million a year
to. Yeah, I know. And then they're going to have to make the phone calls to do all that, and it's going to be very difficult because of his contract, and I understand that. But, dude, I don't understand why you can't have the discussion. Like, you have to understand the circumstances of the Rockets. They are significantly younger than you, John Wall, and there's a rebuilding process to happen. Like, you can't just expect everybody to stop just because you're the veteran when they're in a rebuilding process. And you know, like what, just sit down and have an honest conversation with them and say, look, man, this is what we expect of you. But at the same time, I'm not even sure they want John Wall to sit down on the bench. They want him to be the starter because if they're going to pay him all that money, you might as well play him, right?
Well, you have to. I mean, I think you have to because he is a former All-Star. Because he's proven he can still get up and down the floor. But he's better than any point guard on the Philly roster right now. That's another reason why you would make the move. If Eric Gordon comes with him, which Kelly Eco had reported, with a deal would include Gordon and Wall in a combo package for Simmons. And then I don't know if you have to throw in any of your picks or not. But the fact is that from a Philly perspective, you're better offensively. And so that's why you consider it, because this is Daryl's time to shine. But Daryl also doesn't have that same kind of clout and kind of dominant chips in his corner kind of feeling that he had when he was dealing with other teams with the Rockets. Everybody knows he's cap-strung. Everybody knows that he's desperate because he has to move Ben Simmons before the season starts, because Ben doesn't want to be there and they don't want him back. And he has to try and get some kind of value for him because he has to try and stay competitive with those other two teams I mentioned. So it's a really tough situation for Daryl, but that's why he's making the extra big bucks, because now it's on his shoulders to make something happen.
It's a really tough situation for Daryl. I mean, you've got three players all making more than $30 million a year, and two of those three names is Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons. That is called being cap-struck.
Like, can I ask you a question? Do you feel sorry for him?
No, I don't. I mean, he made plenty of money here. He's making plenty of money in Philadelphia.
He also screwed this franchise over on the way out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's on Tillman Fertitta, and maybe a little bit of blame goes on Les Alexander. But he
had the keys, and he drove it into the ground. And like I said, and the fact that he was so desperate to make it work with James Harden and do anything James wanted to do,
Tillman,
that he gave away every asset, draft pick, and resource they had.
But Tillman, being the businessman that he is and being in the hospitality industry that he's in, I guarantee you that's not going to happen again. He'll never let another general manager. Look, to a certain extent, can you kind of make an excuse for Tillman saying when he bought this team, he didn't expect all this to happen? Like, I think other owners that may have bought this team may have been fleeced by Daryl Morey and Tad Brown just like Tillman did. Like, it's kind of a hard situation when your star wants to leave. It's one thing when one of your star players who hasn't been with the team for a very long time wants to go. I think it really hurts the franchise when a star player has been with the team for like 10 years and he wants to go. And that's what killed Houston. When James Harden left, it just killed this team.
But taking a step back, though, Nick, didn't what really kill this franchise is they let James dictate everything,
like,
and
every
they did
NBA
every
team in
and
the
they
league.
Did they appeased everything that he wanted and more,
like every NBA team in the league. They're gonna do that.
Not everyone, but I see what you're saying. All right, so here we go. We're going to continue on with a half hour into the show. Lots more to get to. Texans camp day two. I guess Deshaun is still an amicable participant, as we'll call it. Why, I don't know. As we'll talk some NFL with you. We've got plenty of baseball. Astros off today in San Francisco tomorrow. So you got that going for you, which is nice. And lots of other things. You got something you want to bring to the table? Bring it to us. 713-780-3776. HRP listener line for calls and texts. Otherwise, it's Twitch and Twitter. He's Nick. I'm Joel. We're the Press Box ESPN.
He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago,
this is Heisman Trophy winner and College Hall of Fame Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.�
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Over Under Sports Bar. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Well, as we were talking about in the first segment, the Astros have done pretty much all they needed to do. If they do anything other than that, it's basically a bonus thanks to James Click and some savvy trades. Now it remains to be seen where everybody else ends up and what everybody else does. We know that Max Scherzer is on the market. We know Craig Kimbrel. We didn't mention yet Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant of the Cubs, but now they are exploding all over social media as the Cubs announced their lineup today, and it does not include either Bryant or Rizzo with the deadline approaching tomorrow, 3 o'clock Central. They're trying to make it sound like they were slated for days off, but everybody is basically pointing the finger and saying they're ready to pull the trigger. They're working on a move or two. The rumor is Rizzo's heading to the Red Sox where he got his start, and he would give the Boston team a big boost as a first baseman. Bryant could go anywhere. They're saying this is the bad thing, Nick. For as much as I said the playing field was leveled of the top teams in baseball when the Dodgers lost not only Trevor Bauer, but they also have had Kershaw on IL. But now they're saying when Scherzer said West Coast teams, everybody was looking Padres, Giants, and saying those are the two teams that are front runners. And then our boy Joel Osteen, Jeff Passan came on the air last night and said that the sleeper is that the Dodgers are going to acquire Scherzer to replace Bauer so that they are in go-for-it mode once again.
Good. I mean, I like the two. At least he's got the two good additions. I think if you were to compare the two, Graveman and Garcia, Graveman probably has a little bit more upside than Garcia does, but even Garcia is an upgrade in your bullpen over a lot of the guys that they have right now. So I like what they did. And you look at some of the stats that I saw on Garcia, 7 MLB seasons, 218 career appearances. This guy has like postseason experience with the Dodgers in 2015. He played four postseason games with the 2020 Marlins. So the guy has postseason experience too, and I think that's a massive plus. And the fact that you can deal with that type of pressure is very important, because you see all the time where you have these aces that do very well in the regular season, but when it comes down to the postseason, they tend to do bad, you know? I think Greinke was one guy that was a knock on him. Was Kershaw another guy that struggles in the postseason as
yep,
well?
Yep.
So I think the postseason experience is really important.
And if you missed it, the Brewers are in go-for-it mode as well, like they always are from a small market team's perspective, and traded for the best player on the worst team, the Arizona Diamondbacks, giving up Eduardo Escobar to help the Brewers infield. That deal was done. The big one last night, Joey Gallo leaving the Rangers for the Yankees for four prospects in the Yankees farm system. I think that's pretty steep. At one point, it was supposed to be six. They narrowed it to four. It still seems to be too high. Yes, Gallo's contract affordable, but when you look at it, isn't that just another big swing and miss potential for a Yankees team that has plenty of that? When you think about Gallo and Aaron Judge and Stanton and all the guys that are either feast or famine with the home run or the strikeout, and yet they put another guy like that in their lineup.
I don't know if you're a Yankees fan that you should be incredibly excited about that. I'm with you, especially what they gave up. And I did see the number of six. I'm like, there's no way the Yankees are going to give up six prospects for this guy. I can understand that's probably a part of the negotiating process. But, yeah, I don't know if you're that excited. I mean, we do have a couple Yankees fans on the fourth floor. Maybe I could ask them. I don't know why that would make you super excited, as good as he is. They just had such a terrible – there's nothing to really look forward to right now if you're a Yankees fan right now.
Like Jake Asman, you mean?
Well, look, there's some Yankees fans are Yankees fans. They're diehard Yankees fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. I sure do. Other deals, the White Sox acquire second baseman Cesar Hernandez from the Cleveland Indians. Chicago had been long in the market to try and get a second baseman. They got one. Hernandez hitting .231, 18 home runs, second year with the Indians. They help a team within their own division, which is rare, but they get a double-A pitcher that they like, a lefty by the name of Connor Pilkington. So that move was also executed. We know about Marte going to the A's, and we'll see how that helps Oakland as they continue to chase the Astros.
I'm not mad the Astros didn't get that guy.
I mean, not either, because he's been looking for big money at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And again, what the Astros did and what limited resources they had to give up was exactly what they needed, and it fell right into their lap. And thanks to James Click, he orchestrated it the right way, and I could not be happier with all that he has done to put this team in the best position to win. Like I said, I don't need to see any more moves from the Houston Astros. If I do, it's icing on the cake, and if it helps even more, fantastic. But because of the guys we have coming back in Bregman and Diaz, because of an arm that we haven't seen yet that has playoff experience in Baez, and then with the guys that you've added, I think that he's done everything to put this team in the best position to win.
Yeah, I don't think you can ask for more. Now it's just I'm just looking forward to the games.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward for the entire lineup to be on the field and ready to play. That's what I want to see, because I want to see them execute. I want to see the bullpen execute.
Well, it would be nice, not just for Dusty Baker, but for fans, when the starter starts faltering and you look in the bullpen and you can actually feel good about who they're going to go get and put in the game. Because we all know that everybody held their collective breath every time a starter didn't go six innings because of the ungodly possibilities that could happen anytime Dusty pointed out to the pen.
Wow.
You know, you think about it. Rayleigh, his security blanket, not anybody that I felt good about. I mean, other than that, Stanek's been up and down. But, you know, Javier, if it takes him an hour to get ready, and when he is, you better use him because he won't be ready for another 3 days. And you go up and Brian Abreu, who, again, electric stuff, as everybody says, but he can't throw strikes. And when he does, they're normally hit right back at him. There was just too many bad ERAs and bad results for a bullpen that now has been completely made over in 48 hours and sits much, much, as you said, they were 28th in the league in bullpen. I think they've got to be in the top 14 right now based on the moves that they've made.
Just on paper, like just from the stats and stuff like that, I would agree. It's significantly better. And who knows what's going to happen when they play. I mean, look, guys like Graveman, who went from one team to even a better team, he still has a lot to play for. You know what I mean? Yeah. Garcia, he's on the Astros.
Well, he's free agent at the end of the year. So Graveman, as good as he's been, and he missed early in the season a month with COVID, he's playing for his next deal, whether it be with Houston or somewhere else. So it's really in his best interest, financially especially,
yeah,
and his next team, to keep it going right where it's been, which has been top-notch and best in the league. Even with the other guys you mentioned, from Garcia on down the list, these are guys that Montero, they've got to perform now because they're playing for the next deal.
Yeah, I think he has a lot to play for. And look, even if it's not just on that alone, the fact that you're on an Astros squad that has a legitimate chance to win a World Series should get you excited, you know? Now, in Graveman's case, because all the teammates absolutely love them, and you know what? I probably should pull back on my stance a little bit on him from yesterday when he was getting all emotional because he was only with Seattle for not even 1 year. But if you are with a team or with a clubhouse for 2 years and you're not necessarily hated, but you're not absolutely loved, but then you go to another team and you've only been with that clubhouse for 6 months and they absolutely love you, I can understand the emotion a little bit. You know what I mean? I can understand why it bothers him, because he actually made a team where he's absolutely loved. And that's not easy to find. It's not easy to find a clubhouse where they have all that chemistry and all that love. And that's certainly what was in the clubhouse for the Houston Astros, 17, 18, 19. Like, even when things were down, like, this team loved each other. You know what I mean? Even when they're on bad streaks, like, dude, that clubhouse was absolutely obsessed with each other. So I can kind of understand why Graveman was a little emotional, but he's on the Astros.
Boy, did you see DePoto, the GM of the Mariners, was catching it from obviously,
oh yeah, from all the players.
All the players that wished to be remained nameless but were not holding back how pissed off they were. A team that was one game behind Oakland for the second wild card gave up their closer for virtually nothing, and they were not having it. They were not happy. And now DePoto has promised that this was part of the bigger plan that he's trying to execute before the end of the deadline. Well, you talk about a guy with pressure on him now. You better pull some moves, and they better be impactful and big-time moves between now and 3 o'clock tomorrow Central Time, or you're going to have more than egg on your face.
Yeah, that's why I understand Graveman's emotions, because they were literally using words like, quote-unquote, betrayed. Like, they literally felt like they were betrayed by their GM for trading away Graveman to the Astros. So they really like this guy. And when you hear him speak,
he
sounds like a likable guy.
He closed the door.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the Astros off today, start a three-game weekend series in the Bay against the Giants, and then two against the hated Dodgers before they come home and the schedule gets a little bit lighter. Minnesota for four, Colorado for two. However, they took care of those two when they were in Colorado. Then at Anaheim for three, at Kansas City for four, and then the Mariners home August 20th. The next stretch after this West Coast swing ends, after the last Dodger game, is where you can really solidify everything from winning the division to the best record in the American League, and you got to take advantage of all these schleps on your schedule because we know how great they play the best teams in baseball, 500 and above. We know how many times they've slipped up against the teams that aren't. This is where they've got to continue to put the pedal down, do what they did to the Rangers after the All-Star break when they came through Minute Maid. They got to continue to take advantage of those bad teams.
Yeah, but they do got a schedule. Giants, Dodgers, Twins, Rockies, Angels. Angels, is that on the road or at home?
The first part of that is at Anaheim.
On the road. At so Anaheim Otani's not going to be Otani won't be in town.
No, but then they go – and then at Kansas City, and then I think Anaheim comes here in September. But, you know, you look at after that, and when they get through, you know, this West Coast swing, there's really not much to worry about besides Seattle, who's been playing good baseball. You've got you're at the Padres for three in September. But other than that, it's all Seattle, L.A., Texas, Arizona, Minnesota. You're looking at – and then the last six with the A's – With a couple with Tampa Bay are going to be big. But for the most part, you've got to take advantage of the next month or so where the schedule's in your favor and you've got your team healthy now, or when Bregman comes back, you will be healthy and you'll be loaded up, and you just got to stop stepping on some throats.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love the fact that now they got all these players too, now that they're three games ahead of the White Sox and tied with Boston. You know what I mean? So now that they can just focus on Boston. Not that the White Sox are not right there. I mean, they can still turn things around and be pretty close. But
the thing you got to worry about with Boston is they've got interest in both Kimbrel and Rizzo. Rizzo helps them immensely at first base and gives them a pop bat in the middle of their lineup. Kimbrel would help them because they need pitching wherever they can get it, regardless of you know, if Sale comes back or not. And then if, you know, those are the guys that can impact your run towards a World Series, especially the National League. You only have to worry about one, so everybody can eliminate each other until you figure out who you're playing. But in the American League, White Sox, Red Sox, you don't want them making these last-minute moves between now and three tomorrow because you like where you're sitting, and as long as they don't go with major, major upgrades, you should be in the best position of strength and power. So we'll see how it goes. Lots more to get to on the program. NBA Draft is indeed tonight, as we started talking about briefly. Rockets picking at 2, 23, and 24. Could they make some trades to get even more on the board for tonight? Is this the beginning of the restart and the retooled Houston Rockets? You better hope so. Otherwise, the wait could be long and it could be painful. Lots more to get to as we continue to roll on with hour number one of the program. Keep it right where you got it. It's the Press Box on ESPN.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
First things first.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Over Under Sports Bar. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, wrapping up the first hour of the program with this segment on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. If you missed it and you're under a rock, we're at Over Under Sports Bar in Webster. Shout out to our man Brian out here, listens to us on a daily basis.
Brian, who I beat in fantasy football like 2 years ago. Like, we were in the championship game, and he faced Nick Sciarra, and guess what happened? He got served.
So here's the thing. So I thought it was really rude that I came to the table, and Nick said, hey, meet Brian. Brian's the guy that I beat in fantasy football for the championship.
I didn't introduce him like that.
Yeah, no, you did. And then when you did that, I was like, well, Brian, that was really rude, and that was really unnecessary. And then Nick pointed out that I wouldn't have said – Nick said, I wouldn't have said anything – but that's what he told me when he came up to say hi to me. So I guess it's self-inflicted, Brian.
Well,
you did it to yourself.
But he also pointed out that we were in the championship game, and he was mad because he had the better record and still lost in the championship game. If he didn't point that out, then I wouldn't have pointed this out, okay?
Ifs, buts, candy, nuts. You know that if your aunt had outdoor plumbing, it'd actually be your uncle. Those things happen. Sometimes you have the best record in the regular season, and it doesn't pan out for you in the playoffs. That's the way the cookie crumbles.
I did appreciate the $50 gift certificate or the $100 gift certificate that I got from El Tiempo. Although I thought if someone from ESPN 97.5 won, that they wouldn't give it to the 97.5er, and they would just give it to, like, the
listener.
The
whatever,
next,
yeah.
Yeah, but no, that wasn't the case. So Brian missed out on that. But shout out to Brian. Brian fixes ATMs all around the city.
Oh, really?
He's a smart individual.
Do you,
he wouldn't share how, you know, how he does that with me. I guess that's against the rules.
You skim? Brian, you skim a little off the top?
That's
like,
kind of the reason
hey,
why I
you know what? How about a little something for the effort? I'm going to fix the old bank machine, and at the same time, I think I deserve a little
it's
something.
It's got to be tempting, right? Especially if the money's there. I don't know how it works, but I would imagine if you're a person that services or fixes ATMs, that's tempting, right?
Fives, tens, and 20s, a whole box full of money?
No, just go for the 20s or 50s. Oh, no, ATMs have 50s.
Do it subtly, Nick. Don't go wait for the big bucks.
There's nothing subtle about breaking into an ATM. Once it's broken into, you need to bounce. Get the big bucks and leave.
It's a lot more noticeable when the 50s and 100s are missing as opposed to a 10 and a 20 here and there.
It reminds me of what was that movie where they tried to steal the ATM, so they just stole the entire ATM? Was that Barbershop? It was either Barbershop 1 or 2. I think it was Barbershop 2.
Okay.
Oh, you obviously – you don't tell me you didn't watch Barbershop.
I did, but I'm not quoting it like you are. I'm not a movie quote machine. My brother-in-law is. He knows every line to every movie, and he always throws them at me, and I'm just like,
He's like, what's my grandmama code?
So this we brought this up the other day, Nick, and it's worth talking about again. Bruce Arians was none too happy when it was brought up by the media that he had his players being identified – by wristbands, who's vaccinated, who's not, but that they weren't wearing them at practice. And he's like, you know what? We are following the rules. We're doing what we're supposed to do. And we had mentioned at the time that this was a deal that was worked out between the Players Association and the league because the league had sent this memo and had already informed everybody, which was a big story, that now games could be forfeited and checks lost and it could be the responsibility of those unvaccinated players. Well, now the Players Association president, J.C. Tretter, is coming out saying that they don't like this wristband use for unvaccinated players. And as I mentioned at the time, it's really kind of violating a lot of law, you know, HIPAA or otherwise. It's everybody's right to personal privacy. They don't have to tell you one way or another if they are or they aren't. And now they are clear cut. It's one thing for the team to know because you're going to be tested a different way. You may have to travel a different way. And a lot of times players are going to see that. But it's another thing to say on a daily basis. The rest of the locker room can look around and go, oh, those are the guys that aren't vaccinated. Those are the guys that I'm coming after if we have to forfeit a game because of unvaccinated players.
Yeah. I mean, look, like I said before, it's a cheap way for a reporter to get clicks, anything vaccinated related. And when they made that report, they were clearly wrong and Bruce Arians was right. They don't have to – the protocol does not say – that they or the policy does not say that they have to wear those wristbands inside at practice. And that's where they got it wrong, and that's why he's bothered by it. And to me, I think it's just he's tired of all the vaccine and the vaccine talks, that he just wants to move past it, that he lost his cool. That's what I think happened. And the other thing is, like when you have the CDC, and I'm not trying to make this a massive vaccination discussion,
right.
But when you have the CDC coming out and they say, oh, new science says that vaccinated people are more likely to spread the new variant Delta 8 than unvaccinated people. Well, then what do you think leagues like the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball are going to do? They're going to react to something like that because you're the CDC.
But I'm saying we got the Arians part of it, right? But then for the league to say, oh, the Players Association's on board. But then to have Tretter come out representing the Players Association and say, not only are we not on board, we think it's public shaming. That what basically they're saying is you don't need wristbands at all because the players that aren't vaccinated are required to wear masks when they're at meetings or when they're in situations where there's group gatherings while the team functions are going on. That's the way there's supposed to be a differentiation. So essentially they're still going to be called out. I mean, it's still going to be noticeable,
but
it's not a different colored wristband.
I understand if you don't want your health conditions to be revealed. Obviously, that's private and should be to you, but is it really public shaming when we're in the middle of a pandemic? I mean, we talk about it all the time. We feel like, you know, maybe it may not kill everybody, but it's spreading and there's a bug
shaming,
and it's
though.
Going around. And like, is it like, are you really that bad of a person if you test positive? Like, honestly, are you like a, like, is it disgusting because you tested positive? No, it shouldn't be. You're in the middle of a pandemic. Chances are, even if you wear your mask, even if you do all the rules, even if you follow everything, you might test positive.
But to the shaming point, especially because of what's on the line, it's one thing to say we're not talking about two people at the grocery store and trying to figure out who's vaccinated and who's not. We're talking about guys in a locker room that have just been told that they could be forfeiting their livelihood and paychecks based on those that aren't vaccinated if it comes down to that. So essentially, you're shaming those that aren't vaccinated, though it's a personal choice for everybody. And I'm not trying to tell you which way to go now.
Right.
The fact is, in the locker room, where guys have a different kind of reaction if it's concerning their paycheck, they're going to have a certain way about them, and they're going to put in their memory bank, oh, now I know who I'm going after if I start losing checks.
Yeah, well, that is different than public shaming. Like, that's a one – public shaming is one discussion, and then going after for blame is another. And if you're trying to not make it public because you don't want to get the blame, that's different than public shaming. Public shaming means you're embarrassed because – you're being shamed because you're and you're embarrassed because you tested positive.
But I'll take it another step for you. It's public shaming because at practice, whether and some teams are electing to not wear them, as Arians was talking about. Other teams are following the guidelines and doing that. If the media is at practice, the media now can quickly identify those that are and those that aren't.
Yeah.
And that is, again, another step of shaming.
I don't know if it is, though. I don't know if it is. Not if we're in a pandemic. If we're in a pandemic and everybody knows that this – literally every freaking country in the world – has positive tests. Like, it's okay if you tested positive. Like, if I see someone and they tell me, you know what, Claire tested positive for COVID. I'm not going to look at her any different just because she tested positive. Guess what? She's out and about. We're out and about. We're working. We have to, like, we're not in a shutdown anymore. Like, it's not the end of the world if you test. Like, I just don't, that's just me personally. But I can see how someone would view that as public shaming, but it's not. It's more about controlling the issue more than anything else. I just don't find that – like, I just don't think people should be embarrassed if you tested positive and that was made public. If you want to make that private, I completely understand that. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's like, just and again, there is no clear-cut answer to all of this because Kevin Stefanski, the coach of the Browns, has said, we're not dividing the team over this issue, so we're not doing it. And I guess basically a lot of other teams are saying, look, you need to get your bleep together. The Players Association and the league need to come together and figure out what we're doing, what we're not. And everybody needs to get on the same page because otherwise it's just crazy. There were pictures on the internet yesterday. Carolina Panther linebacker Jermaine Carter is frustrated because he cannot have contact with his girlfriend and their newborn daughter at practice. But yet he said, we're going to be practicing against the least vaccinated team in the Colts in a couple of weeks. He's like, where's the common sense in all that?
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I get that. And we have. I've talked to people where, you know, he's a friend of mine and he owns a business and he's brought all his employees back from the whole Zoom culture and all that. And, you know, there's some division. And a part of the division is some people want to get vaccinated and some people don't. And one of the people one of the employees that are vaccinated has people like grandfathers and wives and cousins at home that are, have low immune systems or weak immune systems. And so it's a discussion. It's a fight. You know what I mean? Just because one believes in it and one doesn't, you know? And you're going to see some people that are going to be absolutely adamant against it. I mean, football players. The Colts, you just mentioned, they're the least vaccinated. Cole Beasley is adamant about it. I mean, he's been very vocal about it. I think he even dropped a diss track about it as well. I don't know if you can call it a diss track, but he dropped a song about it.
Yeah.
Just that's how adamant he feels about it. So I get that. I get your point about Jermaine Carter, and I see how that would – but that's where it comes down to, well, you have the choice to play or not. And sometimes they need these football checks, and they want to play, and they want to make money. So, you know, it's a difficult discussion for anybody to have. But, I mean, if someone found out that I've never tested positive, but if someone found out that I tested positive, I'm not embarrassed. I'm not. I'm just not.
I'm not either. It's just it is a sensitive subject. We all know that. I think that a lot of people feel that way. It's unfortunate, but it's true. That a lot of people feel like if they have to go out and admit that they're positive. You think about what we went through at the station when everything was going on, and there was a lot of anxiety if people had it. Not to say, hey, I want to get better. I got it. I got to do what I got to do. I got to stay home, and I got to take care of myself. It was, oh, my God, I don't want to get it because now everybody's going to be looking at me funny, and
yeah.
I might be the guy that's being the fingers pointed at to say that I gave it to somebody else, and it could get nasty. That's the kind of things that we're dealing with because this is such an unknown.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, because everybody has their own policy, too. And so it's always slightly different from company to company, you know what I mean? And you can always criticize somebody for their policy. You can always say, you know what, that's not a good policy. That's not a good rule. The rules will never be perfect in a situation like this. They just won't.
No.
But the positive tests are popping off. Like, I do expect to see star players that are absolutely healthy with no injuries, and they're actually going to have to sit out because of this.
But as Jason even indicates on Twitter, a lot of the positive tests we're seeing right now are vaccinated people. You know, and you look at John Rahm. John Rahm, the golfer, who's been now he can't do, participate in the Olympics. Remember, he had to forfeit that tournament with one round to go after he walked off the 18th green because he tested positive. He tested positive again in Tokyo. So whether you're vaccinated or not, whether you've had it once or not, whatever the case may be, we don't know. That's the thing. So we'll continue to move on, move forward. Nationals are playing today. They had a good number of positive cases yesterday, including 8 staffers and 4 players, but they are pushing forward. They are playing. As we get closer to the trade deadline, we'll keep you up to date on anything that might happen in baseball world trade-wise and otherwise as we get into hour number 2 of the program. Coming up next on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.